Hey everyone, this is Jamel Curry. Thanks for tuning in. Today we're back with another episode in our Coca Dona Training Talk mini-series as we get closer to Aravaipa's inaugural Coca Dona 250 on May 3rd. Coca Dona is a 250-plus mile trail race that starts in the outskirts of the Sonoran Desert in Black Canyon City and climbs up into the Ponderosa Pines in the high-altitude mountain town of Flagstaff. The course connects amazing landscapes and iconic towns along the way. These Coca Dona Training Talk episodes will be hosted by our friend Shelby Farrell at Gooder. Shelby will be running Coca Dona this year. She has run a 100-miler before, but this will be a whole new experience for her. So she sat down with several different runners to get some training advice and learn more about their own preparation and race strategy before the big day. In today's episode, Shelby chats with Ben Light, who has towed the line at more than a dozen 200-plus mile races. Enjoy the episode.
Hey, I'm back. It's Shelby here with Ben Light, the Kigala guy. I met him at Javelina 100. Here he is again. How you doing, Ben?
Yeah, thanks for having me on your podcast, I guess you can say, a video cast, talking about Coca Dona. And just before she hit record, I was just kind of basically interviewing her, saying like, yeah, this might be like my 13th, let's say the 13th time to attempt a 200 plus mile distance, but this is her first. And I was like, what's going through your mind? Because I imagine what I'm processing is probably a lot different than what you're processing.
You know, I think a lot of it is answering all of the questions from friends and family that look at me like I'm completely insane for doing this. That's a fun new chapter of life. Like, what are you up to, Shelby? Oh, just running my buns off. What do you have a good answer for that when people look at you like you're crazy?
Well, you get used to it a little bit, and people that are in, I guess that I meet or am around most of the time, they already know. So it's like, oh, Ben, yeah, he's doing, you know, when I'm at the gym, hey, Ben, you know, got any races coming up, or where are you running, or you going, you know, to a different country or something like that, and type of a thing. And so it kind of is like the normal chit chat and stuff like that. But I remember being at first, there's no words that you can put to the experience, and every experience is different. And the biggest thing I get excited about is that it's life changing. Like I look at you and I'm just like so giddy with excitement, because no matter what happens, what comes out on the other side is going to be a different Shelby than one sitting before me right now. And so I'm telling you, I mean, your mind, you know, I talk a lot about perception and perspective. And so your perspective on life is going to completely change, because we throw up our own barriers as just individuals. And, you know, what 2 years ago, you probably thought 200 miles is just absolutely out of the question, you know, maybe even over a year ago or something like that. But as you started to run, as you increased your distance, as you got past 100 miles, that perception of that impossible goal starts to become more possible. And so as you push the distance, even to the 200 and 250, even, you know, and further, you start to realize it's just farther. That's it. So there's just a little bit more problems to work out, and a little bit more preparation and planning. But with experience, it's just, you know, you're just problem solving for 250 miles. That's all you're going to do is sit there, take 1 mile at a time and problem solve for that mile. And you're just going to work your way through it. And, the mental strength that the mind is much stronger of a muscle than any muscle in our body. And you're going to go, you're going to have the best workout, mind, mental workout of your life. Let's say it that way.
Yeah. My mind's getting hot thinking about that. yeah, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I mean, what a lucky thing we get to do, go out and be on our feet for, I don't know, 3+ days, just enjoying nature. So that alone is going to be just a blessing.
Yep. It's wild. Wait till they start blending together. The days will blend together and you'll look back on it. And even when you're still in it and you're on day 3 or 4 or whatever, whatever it is, you're going to look back and go, you're going to say yesterday, but it might've been 2 days ago. Just like you're like, you start to forget, was that day 2 or is that day 3 or is that day 1 and everything like that. It starts to all blend in. And when you watch the sun go up, go down and then go back up and then go back down and then go back up and then go back down, you're like, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like sitting down for a TV series that's just, you can't get enough of. And it all hurts. And I'll tell you from experience of crewing multiple 200s, crewing, pacing, running, it's almost harder to be the crew chief than it is to be the runner. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know, because all you have to do from a crew chief or from a runner standpoint is just keep moving forward, get to the next side, follow the flags, follow, you know, just move. Crew chief is like, I can't let this other person down. And I have to drive, I have to, you know, do all this stuff. I have to have everything ready. And there is really a small window of time that's downtime, depending on the location of the aid station. So all runners out there, I would start thinking about the gift of thanks afterwards. When me and Mike McKnight, our wives crewed us on the Triple Crown the first year in 2017. We got them little custom pendants of the Bigfoot, Tahoe, and Moab. Aww. That they like sterling silver on a necklace. That's to give sweet. To them, because we got all these buckles and we got a Triple Crown trophy and all this stuff like that, but they were out there working just as hard, and there's no way we could have done it without them.
Yeah, I think the big thing I see with Jason, he was out there with me at Javelina, he's just nervous, he's scared for me, you know, you're out there waiting and wondering what's going on. So have you had any good words of wisdom to give to crew and pacers to help them ease their nerves?
Yeah. So me and Brittany, my wife, Brittany, that's crewed me, we've kind of come up with rules, because there has been one time, let's just say it only happened once, that I beat her to the aid station. And it was the Triple Crown at Bigfoot. And I'm the one that made the mistake saying, hey, you know, this is because I had my spreadsheet and I had my chart, and I was supposed to be like 5 hours between, you know, from Twin Sisters to Klickitat. And I said, hey, there's a lake right there by the aid station. I said, go take a swim, enjoy yourself, and then make your way over there. Well, I just got a wild burr under my rear end and was hauling and did it in 4 hours. And yeah, I beat her by an hour, and I pulled in and I knew I beat her by an hour, and I already anticipated, I hope she didn't swim, but I felt good. And so all I did was utilize the aid station, turned and kept going. And she was at the next one waiting for me. But we made a rule that, and this from a nerve standpoint, cause he's going to be nervous, he's going to have anxiety. And the best thing to do is the minute your runner leaves that aid station, you tear down and you go to the next aid station. So now with COVID, it's a little bit different rules. I haven't looked completely at it, but I know that you can't necessarily be, I think if I read correctly, you can't be in the aid station or something until like your rent gets close. So as long as you have cell service, what I would do is go to a point where you're close, you know, you can just pop over there. Don't take too much time shopping. Don't take too much time getting gas. Don't go sightseeing, you know, and stuff like that. Like, really stay by the split chart, especially the first day. The first day, you're going to be able to figure out what they're averaging, what they're, you know, what the runner is actually doing. The split chart is a guess. You know, we've just guessed based upon, you know, but it doesn't factor in altitude gain and loss and technical trail and running and stuff like that. So the number one rule is just get there, get ready. And if it's at night and you need to sleep, I always had a rule with Brittany is that she would get there. She would get the stuff ready that I'm going to need. And then she would go to sleep, and she would know that I would knock on. So we had a rooftop tent on my Jeep. I would knock on the tent, let her know I was there, go back to the aid station, start getting something to eat, something real, like a good piece of food. And she would come over with the stuff. We'd exchange it, and then I would head out. This way, when you're crew, all you're doing is waking up every like 5 minutes. Did I miss? You know, like, you're just nervous and you're not getting the sleep you need. So you become slow. Plus, you have to drive. And if you're not getting any sleep, that's like driving impaired. And so we just kind of established that. And I just knew, I mean, I had this big bright yellow Jeep with a rooftop tent. I just would be running and I'd find the Jeep, knock on the window. And we just had the system down. And I'd be, you know, there and gone in 5 minutes. And she would pull down the tent because she was sleeping up in it. And she would drive, you know, to the next one and set it back up, get everything ready, go back to bed. So
sweet.
It's crew, yeah.
Should hopefully have decent vehicle access then.
Yeah. And I'm saying this from past experience. We're 4 weeks out. I still haven't dived into the crew and basically the runner's Bible, you know, runner's manual, and looked at all the details. They've been kind of changing things a little bit here and there, as they finalize permitting. And so I kind of wanted to wait until like probably about a week or two out. So probably in another week or two, we'll be, I'll put together a little notebook Bible that has driving direct, you know, has everything for my wife. So I feel that she's, you know, knows where everything's at and can navigate properly.
Yeah, I have it on my desktop, but I haven't really dug into it. That's what taper weeks are for. There's going to be plenty of downtime 2 weeks before the race.
Yeah.
Figure it out then.
We're all injured during taper week because everybody has like the ghost injuries, like all of a sudden that start popping up, knees start hurting, ankles start hurting. It's because all those muscles are so used to being so active, and now all of a sudden all you're doing is rolling out and doing little like 20-minute jogs or something like that. And it's like, and you're the lack of endorphins and serotonin levels, everybody's in a depression for that week.
Yeah. I'm good. I was worried just because I did a lot of miles last week. I had a 32 mile day on Friday and then a 26 mile day on Saturday, and with CrossFit workouts both of those days too. And I don't know, I was just sore, and I was like, oh God, don't overtrain, Shelby. That would be the stupidest thing you could do right now. But I feel
like, can I ask how old you are? I can't ask how old you are. This is like recorded or something like that.
You're
young.
I just hit the big 3-0 last year. So I'm 30 now. I'm old.
Yeah. My body wouldn't be able to recover at 43 that much volume.
But okay,
I'm a lower volume guy.
You have a big thing coming up. You're pacing Zion, right? Zion 100.
Well,
or something.
I'm not going to pay. I'm actually just doing the Zion Traverse. That's my my last big run. So I'm just going to go, my cousin, we were supposed to do Grand Canyon, but things logistically changed. And so I decided, I was like, hey, I've done Zion Traverse before, and it's part of my project coming up in September. And so I'm taking him on a sightseeing. It's like 41 miles. So it's 41 miles. It'll be slower pace. I always encourage, you know, slow pace for your long runs. Mimic kind of like a racing speed so that you can kind of get used to that feel and know about how long it's going to take you to be out there and how much exertion you're putting through. But yeah, so that'll be my last hurrah, will be this Saturday, and then I'll start dialing it back. And
yeah, I too like to take the long run slow. And my big thing right now is really figuring out nutrition. I think that's something that a seasoned athlete has more control over, just more experience, more practice. So yeah, lots of practice eating every 45, 30 minutes on those past runs, and it felt good. I did it.
So from my past experience and some of the past experience of friends that I know, so day one with food, stick to your 100-mile regimen.
Okay.
Especially with the products, try not to eat too many products, especially when you pull into an aid station and they have something you've never had before. You know, the carnal rule of just don't eat anything new on race day kind of a thing. Day two, it's a free for all. I always say if anything's going to happen, it happens in day one. You don't really hear people getting sick day two, day three as much. Everybody kind of gets sick on day one, whether it's the heat, whether it's just their body going through, you know, but after the night of day one and into day two, I always call it your body goes into ultra mode, and literally you can become a garbage disposal, and anything in the aid station, it's just give me, give me, give me. And your body's like, I love this. Keep it coming. And you just keep moving forward. Like the Bigfoot 200, I put down 11 cheeseburgers between mile like 50 to 200, so 150 miles. I put down 11 cheeseburgers at those, spaced out between those aid stations.
That's awesome.
So,
are they patties or like skinny patties or
no? Well, everybody's a little bit different, but some of them were pretty big and like as much condiments as you could put on it, just so you have enough saliva in your mouth to go down. Mm. You need the extra moisture because this will. You don't have saliva when you're running that far.
Yeah, no, you don't. I definitely had to just take in some water and like try to.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's exactly. So fun. That's awesome. So what else do you like to eat when you're running other than burgers?
I've totally changed up my diet. So it's right now it's really just Martin gels. I do Rowdy bars or there's a couple of different other bars that I like. But I'll keep it to that. But then the aid stations, I'll go for something real and hearty. Mm-hmm. But I always kind of keep it really simple on day one until you get into the night. And then I start to, I did one Tahoe 200 on, I got really sick, and then I started eating Top Ramen, and that's all I wanted at every aid station. I just wanted Top Ramen, and you pretty much became the Tahoe 200 became the Top Ramen 200. And then the next year, like it was instant mashed potatoes and bacon.
Oh.
And I'm like in like a styrofoam cup, it's just like instant mashed potatoes and then bacon and just salt. And you're just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is like, it's like unreal. You know, you just, food becomes like super flavorful and crazy and stuff like that.
Yeah. I had a great experience with the vegan broth at Javelina.
See, it's like all of a sudden it's just something.
Yep. Yeah. Weird. I didn't expect it, but definitely got me over some nauseous humps.
Yeah.
Then I might have overdone it and had too much vegan broth, but whatever. Live and learn.
It can go out the same way it came in. It's just that easy.
Yeah, luckily that's an easy one. Let's see. What else do we think runners are thinking about right now? Have you ran any of this course before?
No. So that's something I have to say I'm excited about. I've never even done Black Canyon. I guess I've ran around Black Canyon City. So I'm imagine I might have landed on what, maybe the first mile or two or something like that. But other than that, like, I'll be sightseeing the whole time. I'll be taking it in. And that's actually from, there's advantages and disadvantages that I go into any of the other races that I've already ran multiple times. And I'm like, I know exactly what climb I have coming up. I know exactly the flat spots. I know exactly the descents. I know where I need to pull back or push forward. This way, it's just like even keel. You don't know what's really in front of you. Just it, be present. Enjoy the, you know, the moment, and don't get your heart rate, you know, above 150, kind of a thing, you know, keep it under 150. So that's all I keep. I watch my watch. Like, I'm a watcher. I watch my stats. I just sit there and watch numbers.
Yeah, I actually did that for the first time on a Saturday. I had a friend that is a watcher who was running with me, and she was obsessing over her heart rate. And I might have to change my display up on my Coro so it, yeah,
yep,
works with all the numbers I want to see. But 150, okay, that's a good goal. Thank you.
Well, I mean, everybody's different.
Right.
That's me. You know, I'm 43 years old, so my heart rate, and everything, it all depends on your VO2 max. But like, when you're, you know, it all depends. I try not, 160 is getting in zone four for me, for mm-hmm. sure. And I don't want to be in, you want to be, for me, you want to be in zone, you know, three,
yeah,
mainly. And so I think there's going to be a lot of running. I'm not 100% positive, but from the vert chart, it looks like there's actually going to be a lot of running. Anybody that has wheels, like running wheels on them, I think it's going to be a pretty fast race, or they could potentially really blow themselves up.
Yeah.
Because it looks like it's going to be a little bit more running than hiking.
Interesting. Okay. I kind of like the sounds of that, minus the blowing myself up part, but you know, running is fun. Right. That's why we're doing this. Sweet. See, well, and you talked a lot about Kogala Lights with yep. Jamil and Rob previously. So we don't need to get into that, but no. Very glad I have one, because definitely going to need that.
It's a tool. And I try to be fair to everybody. I mean, the Kogala Light is not a headlight. It can replace a headlight for certain environments, but a headlight definitely has its place and its strengths. And so I honestly think for the majority of this race, for most 200s, that 6 feet circumference bubble that light provides is just, I mean, that's where you're at anyways. You're only looking to, you know, 4 or 5 feet in front of you, especially at night when you look and you look up. And you can turn it down. That's the thing. You don't have to keep that thing up so bright. You could turn it down and your night vision will kick in and you'll be able to see more stars. You'll be able to see the cliff outlines a lot more. But if you got that thing cranked up to 800, your pupils are going to be dilated and you're not going to, it's going to be like a black abyss out there.
Yeah. I was playing around with it last night, and you'll get to see the video soon, and I'll be posting it on YouTube later tonight. But I had a moment where I was sort of only looking very close in front of me, and I got to an intersection, like the trail was closed, and I wonder how well the course is going to be marked, because running at night, trying to navigate the course, yeah, that could be interesting.
So from my experience, and most people that have run 200s, they've learned, like, I've ran multiple 200 plus mile distances without any course markings. You can do it from your watch or you could do it from your phone, especially from your phone. And if you got the Gaia app, you got the course loaded up, which is so easy on Gaia because you just airdrop it or just send it to your phone and just load it up and it's just there. That thing is so, it's so accurate and it's so easy to use. I mean, as long as your phone's working properly and charged.
Bonus of the Kogala Light is you can plug your phone into it
if you have
that battery.
But yeah, throwing on airplane mode, just have that one app open, Gaia, and I keep it in a very accessible pocket. I look at it all the time. You know, if I ever feel like I haven't seen a flag for a while, I'll pull that out, because there's no sense of getting anxiety or slowing your pace down or something like that. You just pull that out. And if you have it on there, you're going to be able to see if you're on the marker or not. Mm-hmm. And if you, and not only load the GPX file, but take the time and go into the settings and download the maps to for offline use. People forget to do that. And so they're like, oh, I could see the map just fine. Well, once you lose service, if you didn't set it to download, it's going to be just like a green color or a brown color or something like that. But you're going to have the line, but you're not going to be able to see contour lines. You're not going to be able to see trail intersections and stuff like that. So super important. It's super handy tool, and it's just going to make your experience a lot better. There's many times where I've had to help other racers because they just didn't have everything loaded properly beforehand. And they just, you kind of end up banding together. They kind of follow you. But
yeah. You know. Yeah. Actually, while we're on this topic, before we run out of time, people around you, house, I imagine with a 200 miler, we're going to get pretty spread out here. Yep. I mean,
you get spread out.
What's your experience with that?
You get spread out. But here's the cool thing is after day one, you kind of find your groove, and there's other people that find their groove, and you start leapfrogging each other. You start to like almost become like the 10 or something people in an hour or two time frame that are, you know, in a section, all of a sudden become best buddies, because one, they're seeing each other at the aid stations. They're talking to each other. Hey, how's it going? You start telling them, you know, some interest, you know, things. Before you know it, you guys are like best friends by the time you get to the end. And so, and unless you're like in the front and your only friends are your pacers and your crew, and then you get to meet the aid station workers for the first time every time, but you're not have anybody else. Unless you're like, I want to say Mike McKnight or Carl Meltzer, you know, usually you get to know people really well around you. And it's just a lot of fun. I mean, it's such a, oh my gosh, there's a really amazing community at that 200 mile distance.
Yeah. Yeah. Trail running in general. I didn't make any friends at Javelina, but I think that was because of COVID and things being spread out. But I'd say it was weird.
Odd Javelina.
But every 50K and 50 miler I've done in the end are usually just helping push that person along and taking turns, you know, just putting the energy out and getting it done.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I look forward to this. I think I'll pause the recording and we can like say goodbye for real. But I just wanted to conclude this conversation. Ben, it's awesome talking to you again. I'm so glad we met back in October, and looking forward to seeing you on course.
I'm looking forward to trying to keep up with you. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Oh man, who knows what's going to happen out there, but yeah, it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Sweet. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That does it for today's episode. Thank you to our friend Shelby for doing these interviews. And thanks to our guests for sharing great training advice and insights into their own Cocodona race preparation. We've got a lot more trail running content coming your way soon, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a thing. And if you've got the time, consider leaving us a review. It really helps us out. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Jamil Curry. See you on the next episode.